This is Saha Says. Let's get to it. Okay, so one thing that's been blowing up my Twitter feed, and quite frankly, it's getting very, very, very annoying, is the Apple stuff.
Sure.
And it turns out that I follow 50 different EFF guys, from actual staff attorneys to the foundation itself to just guys that call themselves EFF activists, and I can't find, you know, where they actually work for the EFF. I just find they say EFF activists, and I said, well, what does that mean? Is you have a membership card, you got a player card, you got a bio or something? I do know that this one guy had one of the most punchable faces on Twitter.
That's
awesome.
Great.
That's
great
awesome.
It is. Okay, that's what he should put in there.
Right.
Most punchable face on Twitter.
I think that's
is
a
that
great
on his resume?
So what about exactly? So what about the actual Apple incident here, where they're saying, all right, the whole world that they're pushing for what officially?
The world is burning because the government is pushing forward on this. Code is not speech, and speech is not code. Apple says BS. Yes, it is. And the government is kind of leaning on a couple of previous cases where the direction isn't that clear. Apple is going to the mat with it because they have 12 or 13 different cases in the pipeline.
Mm-hmm. It's intellectual property.
Yeah. So,
an interesting sidestep to this. While this is all going on, Amazon announced earlier this week that they are removing encryption support from all of their devices if you want to follow their software forward. But they're saying it's not because of this whole Go group. They're saying it's because no one's using it on their devices.
Oh, that's bull honky.
That is not.
Well,
that's
lame. Nobody ever.
But the best part about an Apple Amazon device is just to flash it and put Synergen mod on it, and you've got a really cheap, decent device at that point.
See, nobody is harping on the true function of cryptography here is that you're not supposed to know what's there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's not supposed to. I shouldn't have to go and enable it.
Right. But you don't regulate math, was the argument that the guys from some of the other news sites were pushing, is that you can't legislate numbers. You can say yes or no, you're not allowed to use this feature or that feature based on something that actually took place. But look, in the grand scheme, following up, the fault was actually not on the person, the perpetrator, whose device it is. In many ways, all of the snafus that came after the fact, all of the errors come from the fact that it was mishandled. It comes back to, I think, a deeper core issue. Yeah, you're right. Cryptography isn't the enemy here.
Well, tell that to
our lawmakers?
Well, tell that to the import-export fellows. We can't send PS4s to Iran because there might be some AES implementation on the SOC they use.
Right.
You know, that's ridiculous to say that is a ridiculous stance to take for somebody saying, we can't legislate math. We do legislate math. I mean, we do all the time. Now, that's a dumb stance to take.
Give me two examples.
That is one of them. We can't fully implement. AES is used all the time for all kinds of different calculations, right? At the heart of several different cryptos, not crypto schemes, but
stream ciphers. Not going to be on your public key style or your asymmetric stuff won't use that. Your asynchronous actions won't use that.
So there's a reason why Intel can't implement the full-blown AES on a chip, in spite of how many times it's used. And the fact that they could really speed up the encryption and decryption process if they just implemented the entire algorithm on a chip, and it's because they can't export the chip. They can't export the whole the entire microcode for the processor to Iran, China, whatever, because of Trans-Pacific Partnership.
It's risk. It's an introduction of risk because then it might be possible for someone else to take advantage of those features that is not desirable.
Well, then it's expressly prohibited, too. You have to list, you can't export crypto to Iran.
Can't you also take in mind the recent talk about ASUS routers getting, you know, annual audits because of the weak protection on it for the users. You know, the best part of it is getting Flash with open software so it doesn't have as many vulnerabilities as the regular, you know, stock firmware that comes out.
So, I agree with that. I think everybody should Flash. I'm a big supporter of open embedded, open source hardware. I like that. I love it. I can't set aside some of my more libertarian beliefs to say that you have to mandate that companies do it. I think that the companies will do it because the customers will demand it. It's at a certain point. So with the cryptography thing, it's going to be a demand on the side of the consumer because they are going to want their user credentials protected. That's what it's going
to
be.
But doesn't this, right, so shouldn't we skip the crypto discussion and go to user privacy as our conversation topic?
Yeah, because that's what's been decided at the Supreme Court level. The penumbra of laws and decisions equates to an umbrella of privacy that you don't actually have an explicit right to privacy. One of the Supreme Court justices outlined that through an accumulation of various rights, you have an express right to privacy.
But it
even if it's not written.
So take that to the next step, which is, okay, so if I have a device, I am being given or blessed with this allowance of privacy based on, you're not legislating the crypto, even if you are some other realm, it comes back to that's maybe where they're leaning on this writ, the sum of all fears, the writ, no, I'm getting it wrong. But the point being, you know what I'm trying to get at, it is the fact that you can't lean on something else. This is free speech for individuals. That's where the free speech comes in. It's not the technology. It's the actual piece of technology in your hands. You paid for it. You're entitled to that privacy based on the fact that you made the purchase. It's your thoughts, your ideas, your intellectual property. As Cooper was pointing out, that's where the actual, oh, look, it's my privacy, and that's where my free speech comes from, because I'm allowed to say or think whatever I want without worry that the thought police are coming for me. That's the argument, isn't it?
And we can completely avoid that, Wicket, by separating the key protection mechanism from the device itself.
Okay.
But so you also have to look at it as a whole, since one, you know, thanks to Patriot Act, our individual rights, privacy, what have you, you know, constitutional rights in general have been eroded over the years.
Well, I'm not.
Just one more step.
I'm not big on the Patriot Act stuff, and I just don't think that for this the Patriot Act doesn't apply so much because you're not talking combatant items. I really think that what comes in here is certain Calia arguments, because there is precedent for hooking crypto on telecom devices. It's the DCS system that the FBI uses for the on-demand tap and trace.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in all PBXs, all telco boxes, and nobody bats an eye. During the net neutrality debate, that was the point that I was trying to put across, that you guys all want your free internet. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, I would love to be able to set aside every single privacy belief I have because I want my Netflix free. You know, that's the danger of some of these government-wide regulations. When you brought some of these broadband service providers into the FCC fold.
Say that again?
When you bring the providers into this FCC fold and you treat them as traditional service providers as opposed to the way they have been treated as kind of footloose and fancy free, now all these different acts pertain to them, like Calia, right? Assistance to law enforcement at some level. And law enforcement can then demand that ISPs provide mechanisms for them to hook into their, like, do deep packet inspection, things like that. So this whole item, this whole thing could have been avoided if we just, well, first off, there's a key separation from the device itself, or key protection separation from the device itself, to the crypto itself, like open crypto, smart cards, releasing the key on the card, releases it to the system,
right.
And then the system just uses that key back and forth. So the system in and of itself on the phone doesn't have any input in how the key is protected. It just knows, oh, here's the key coming through.
Right, but it's a connection through, right? So it's in the same way that there are other hardware-backed security means that would allow you to store this stuff, and you have to go through that storage medium in order to access the private key material. So it comes back to, here's the PIN, I'm entering my PIN, and I want to unlock the device. How is that separable from the device's function in the terms of, I found a flaw, or a bad actor did something with this device, and I want access to all the materials in it. So how do I backdoor that, says, let's say, one law enforcement agency over the manufacturer of the device?
When you separate the key protection from the device itself, what you get is you have two different vendors in the mix. Kind of like how Microsoft has opened up their security architecture a little bit more. So I can take the Aventura cards, the smart cards, and use them for login, and it has nothing to do with my Windows credential. I log into my Windows system through them. They are not protecting, Windows is not protecting the key at that point.
No.
The smart card is.
But that would, okay, so that requires an off-device key management system.
Or the, what is it, the Google?
U2F.
What?
That's the YubiKey. That's a YubiKey, and that's a FIDO device. Mm-hmm. Basically, there's a sync, it's like, similar to the RSA token concept, or the Google off, where there's an off-site seed.
I'm not completely sold on that because we saw the RSA intrusion that revealed some of that seeding.
Yeah, that's 3 years ago. Four years ago. But okay, so the point being, it's still an on-device, off-device question at that point for separating the issue and the protection from the device itself. Okay, so now we're talking about secure element, embedded secure element versus detached. And the history has shown us in the last 6 years to 10 years that people want ease of use. They need, people will not do it if it's hard. And hard equals, I don't want to plug in an external something. I want to have it embedded. I want it to be secure. So you have to have a layer of separation. You have to have physical barrier, a gap, some kind of tech gap between the device itself and the storage box for the key. And you've got to have a means to put stuff in, get stuff out, without compromising the device or the container. I agree with you that, yes, that the way to answer that question is to bring it separately. But the problem is how do you implement it?
Well, we managed to do that. I think it's a lot easier to remember a smart card PIN than it is to remember the password scheme. Anybody who's been part of the DoD structure so far in recent years, by hook or by crook, and some folks, contracting is the only route available to us post-career. We didn't exactly have a thriving private industry for that for a while. And smart cards were the best thing that ever happened over there. I remember having to change Air Force account creds all the time. It was just a miserable nightmare. But if you tell me, here's your smart card, here's your 4-to-6-digit PIN, put it in, and you're logged on. By the way, you never have to change your password again, because if somebody tries to brute force your PIN, after 3 attempts, burned out, and after 10 attempts, even the master PIN, or PUK, in the PUK, won't unlock it. That was just easy. I have to lock my system? What's easier, pulling out a smart card, one action, or locking my system at a minimum,
two keys.
Control, Alt, Delete, Enter, or Windows key L?
Right. But so that's one aspect. But that's not where this is the prime player, the place it really takes place. And jump in here.
One of the things is when it comes down to it, I have to agree with Apple fighting back on this for the main reason of if they allow the backdoors, they allow stuff like this to occur. Mm-hmm. Who's going to trust in their product? And it comes down to, it's a money thing, too. It's a business thing. And end up going to be, well, hell, if they're going to, do all this stuff and then give them keys to the kingdom, why am I going to use their product?
Sure. You don't actually feel like you can use it in good conscience with or a clear conscience. You're always going to be looking over your digital shoulder to see who's watching your stuff. But that's actually a brilliant insight into social media, because we should all be doing that on social media anyway.
Very true.
But
plus, if you think about it, if you let FBI get away with it now, where's it going to end? Anytime they want anything, they're just going to say, give it to me. They already do that now. But hopefully corporations in general will say, no, thank you. This is my product. I need to protect my user. Just like if they were their own IT person saying, I need to think of my user when I'm, dealing with the end product, instead of, oh no, you're big business, you're big gov, I'm just going to hand you over the keys to the kingdom, no matter what it is, just because you ask.
That's the entire premise of the key separation, is that Apple may not care where the key comes from, just that is your key associated with your account. If they're not responsible for the secure enclave, if the secure enclave is off device somewhere, it's another vendor, that other vendor has no knowledge of Apple's device, to you, and Apple has no knowledge of what your key is specific to that vendor, there's no legal argument. They can't force those two to cooperate.
Okay. So I've been misunderstanding your argument then. So you're suggesting make it open to the point where you can bring your own key, like I've got a Keybase key, for example, and that's what the device is encrypted.
Exactly.
On. Okay, that makes that's brilliant. That before. That makes great
that sense. That'll torpedo the first person to market with a commodity solution that implements either YubiKey, smart card, or whatever into an Android platform, probably not an Apple platform, kind of locked in environment there, is going to be the winner in this. So that's my final thoughts.
The only problem is I think that there's still going to be those people that are going to be like, oh, this is too hard. And it's going to happen.
But you're going to have an option for the risk and the grace of a default setting. And that default setting can still be, hey, use our built-in crypto system, use our built-in a PIN system, and we'll go ahead and we'll do whatever it takes to keep you moving forward at an ease of use or user experience that you are accustomed to, or you can select.
Or the FBI will possibly get your stuff.
But that's also presupposing, as I tighten my tinfoil hat, that presupposes they don't already have a backdoor in, and this has all been for show anyway. But that's fine.
They can't. This is causing much of a kerfuffle at this point.
Because people are too confused over what crypto can and cannot do, and what the numbers can and cannot do, and how they are done.
The FBI wouldn't be pressing this in open court right now if it had some other manner.
Okay, enough of this, because we can drive this into the ground.
Yeah, there'll be conference papers on that. And
the carnivore program? Is it real? That's in the movie.
No. There have been as far as conferences go, that is going to come up constantly this year. Yeah. We're going to see at least one or two privacy conferences. Speaking of rolling into conferences,
to see it'll be in DEF CON or Black Hat. I'm sure
it's going to be
irritating. Actually,
it's going to be another policy DEF CON. They happen once every 3 or 4 years. Big case drops. Yeah. And it drops enough ahead of the CFP, all of a sudden you get DEF CON, the political edition.
And Manu, did you go to the last time, it was 2 years ago, DEF CON had a policy wonk lounge?
Oh, I hope you do that. Yeah.
That was fantastic.
That's great. Go here. You want to discuss the vagaries of policy, go here. All you Linux beards, this is where you can sit there and yell at everybody else about how they're doing everything wrong. That's way too full of a beard to be a Linux beard.
Yeah, that's the wrong. It's a different
wrong kind of beard. Wrong kind of beard. You're looking for a sparse beard just under the chin there.
Oh, don't even.
Just a neck beard.
Yeah, neck beard. Oh. Just a straight up neck beard down here.
Well, okay, but your level of complexity is owed to the type of neck beard you have, according to the internet. But anyway, so you were starting to lead us down a positive road of conference discussion.
I want to go over some of the RSA conference redux. Now, I understand that this is a vendor conference. This is the vendor conference.
Sure.
But there are two key readouts that I got over, at least over Twitter. One of them was that the differentiate, when your company is like 95% of every other company there, and they're still, we're differentiated from our competitors, and nobody made a calculus joke. Not a single one there. Not a single Leibniz notation joke, not a Lagrange notation joke, and I thought that was lost upon the public.
And it's because we're not going. We're not going there.
No, because that's not where we want to go, because everyone who all the popular nerds who would go to RSA go, you can actually hear a collective sigh or groan over all of Twitter, because Twitter is for complaining, apparently, according to Jack Daniel.
Oh, no.
You just go and, and that's it. And then all of the cool kids go to B-Sides SF, which takes place at the same time as RSA.
B-Sides has positioned itself so well throughout the years to be just the counterbalance. Okay, send your CTO over here and your security guys that can go over to B-Sides, whatever.
Yep.
So
which is definitely helpful.
Right.
So that brings us into...
Makes it affordable.
And that's the whole point of
the average guy.
Right, because RSA conference is very expensive.
Yeah, and I'm not going to ever go unless the company that I happen to work for actually sends me, because looking at the prices, even the hotels, it's like, are you kidding?
Well, not even just sends me, makes me go.
What was that?
It's like, not just sends me, but makes me go.
Makes
you go. I prefer,
because you have to push product at this point, too.
Yeah, exactly, because then, so we do have individuals out there right now, or individuals are there, booth set up, everything. I'm like, no, thank you, I'm good.
Hmm. You don't want to be a booth babe?
No, I do not.
No,
I think pretty hard. Pretty good in the dress.
It's amazing. They banned the booth babes, but I still see plenty of.
I still see lots of costumes. Right,
lots of costumes and
very short things.
Exactly, tight clothes. It's amazing.
Tempers are very short.
There's an express ban on quote unquote booth babes. However, the IT department, the security engineering department is somehow full of nines and tens.
Yeah.
Dude, you gotta have customer facing help desk that can ease the customer from screaming at you to be going.
The RSA on the RSA conference side of things, it was. I knew it was going to be bad when CSI Cyber showed up. That's like the bellwether event.
I would have liked to go into that booth just to laugh. Was it right next to the Scorpion booth and Mr. Robot?
No, I think we avoided the Walter O.
I wish they would bring IT crowd back just to have it right next to them, too.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
I would just totally go and hang out with Moss.
Yeah, absolutely.
You talk about his days as Little Bow Wow.
Yeah. I'd ask him to bring the bigger glasses.
I remember those days.
He loves to be reminded. So, weren't you rapping on the Disney Channel like 5 years ago?
Don't remind me of that. He's done such a much better job in his adult awkward life.
That's much. Hey, it's all about the hair, though. You know,
he shaved his hair. He had those goofy cornrows for a while.
I thought he just took them out.
I got confused. I got confused with him and Master P's kid for a while.
Oh yeah, which is too bad. You can't get them confused.
RSA conference just ended.
Well, RSA conference done.
Just ended, and the videos, by the way, I saw Iron Geek posted. They're already, half of them or more are already up. He's already on to the next con. By the way, the man is a machine.
Yeah, apparently.
He is a machine. He actually produces all of those videos with post-audit and edit scripts and publishes within 72 hours or less.
And it's a good cut. It's a good cut. It doesn't sound like crap, and there's not...
If the speakers suck...
It's a good idea.
You should ask
the scripts to
for all so the that for his editing, so it can be automated. If you could put it on GitHub, that would help the little guys.
That's not a bad idea. Iron Geek, if you're listening, post your scripts.
Why don't you just tweet it to him?
Holla at your boy.
Because I know we were both talking to him the other day.
I want to wrap up on some of the other conferences. So, B-Sides Austin is coming up
on the 13th.
Already sold out on tickets.
I'm pretty sure that we can find our own way in, should you get a hold of us or the AHA members.
I'm volunteering.
Yeah.
If you get B-Sides
Austin is actually the end of the month, and because it's Thursday and Friday. So it's the third. Yes. So because Mike Talk was accepted, so I'll be speaking.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So that's two of us. I got accepted at ISSW or InfoSec Southwest.
Nice.
And you get the B-side side. But the unfortunate part about ISSW was that the great Todd Beardsley emailed me back my slide saying, you need to take some slides out.
Oh, really?
Oh,
yeah. The jokes were very uncouth. So he said, but I was honored because he said, look, the presentation stands on its own. But I think that some of your slides might infringe upon our harassment policy, which if you haven't violated a harassment policy, I don't consider you part of the InfoSec community.
That's true. That's true.
Could you show those if you get warned, Alamo Draft House luncheon, be like, oh, the by the slides way, you went to my talk. These are the slides that didn't make it.
The slides that didn't make it. There's no technical.
It is like an aha meeting.
There's no technical info.
Just be prepared for lots of heckling.
Wow, I actually completely blew that up in the wrong direction with that date mention. It is indeed the 31st and the 1st of, well, thank you it's very new. Much.
You're welcome.
Myra Wolf for getting me straightened on that.
So I was confused with the date. I said 18th.
So I must be, I don't know what I was reading, and I appreciate you getting that right for us.
Oh, you're welcome.
And so that's actually going to be a fantastic time, always has been.
The guys
who run that it's a class act. They do a good job, and you will learn something. If you have the time and you're in the Austin area or can get there, it'll be worth your effort. Now, that being said, if you're going to spend some money, ISSW, InfoSec Southwest, you got to get to InfoSec Southwest. That is, if you're starting up in this space and you can afford to do it, they have usually get in touch with your SAHA folks or your AHA folks to work on a discount to get entrance to that, right?
We do have a discount. I think it's a sizable one, too.
Plus, they have a decent, they have a student rate ticket as well.
Bring in your student ID or student email or something. Don't make Chris and them and Trevor hunt for that stuff. They're good people, and they don't need to be sitting there dealing with my shenanigans, the speaker shenanigans.
If you have a .edu, it makes it easy for you.
Right. Well, I had a tough time last time because of the Georgia Tech email address. I'm in my master's program, and I don't get an ID unless I actually go to Atlanta.
You can also show them a receipt for what you paid for your tuition. That worked for me, along with my EDU.
That's actually a really good piece of information. If you're going to approach the nice folks there who are going out of their way to try and make it more accessible for students, please bring some kind of proof if you don't have a physical ID. That is an excellent tip.
But if you have the ability to pay, pay it.
Definitely.
Yep. If your company's going to pay for
you're supporting
it.
Supporting something
wait,
that.
Companies
helps.
Paying for things?
If your company's going to pay for it, then have them pay for it.
What is this?
If they're going to pay for it, get a VIP.
Wait. What companies do you know that actually pay? No, I'm just kidding. No, okay. If you actually have the blessing of a company that actually can afford or chooses
like
to send
would.
You. So some of us do it on our own, under our own power, under our own steam, because you feel it's part of your curriculum. So that's the other reason to go to cons, right, guys?
Yes.
So if you have or if you're supporting some kind of certification, it is a great idea to attend conferences because you will get 8 hours per day to register with your continuing education credits, whatever they're called, whether they're CPEs or whatever they're calling them.
Right.
So it's a great way to keep your education current and learn something and cross paths with those who are interested in similar things to what you are. So what else is coming up? I have to say it.
Go ahead. Go with it.
San Antonio, Texas, B-Sides. It's actually bsidesatx.com. We are still accepting papers right now through the end of March. We are accepting call for papers, submissions. We have it actually finally made the website more accessible to you, and it actually has a link to submit pages. It's all good.
So what about the fire talks? Are we going to do the fire talks again? Because I had a blast hosting those last year.
And actually, yes, there are fire talks, and I have to say that, please, if you've got the time over lunch, let's do this. So, and you know what? I'll actually give you access to the website if you want to do a fire talks page, because there isn't one right now.
Just an entry is fine, and it's around Robin. We do it the same thing as we do it the same way. I mean, we borrow so much, especially here from AHA, just because they have the good ideas kind of first. So I think our website's a little bit spiffier, but no shots fired over that.
Yeah.
So
cough.
I think our T-shirts are too, but
oh no, our T-shirts
sold out. I can't believe they had an issue selling out.
So talking about
shirts. Conferences,
you didn't mention one that also was done by the same guys that do ISSW, you know, which is a good group. They did the first ever biohack conference. In Austin. And, you know, I myself went there and have a couple of souvenirs.
No, wait. Hold on. You're sliding this around here. Let me go ahead and let you set that up. What are you showing us? What is this?
This is him getting injected with what?
No, it's not me, but it's an example video. I was actually videotaped on my right hand, but I don't know who they were or how to get a hold of them. So you don't get to hear the screaming wails of a little girl.
Okay, so
and no, it wasn't my daughter. It was actually me going, "Oh my God, that needle's so freaking big."
Okay, so wait. So what exactly did they do to you? What did you have done?
I got tagged with a chip, both in my right hand and my left hand. My left hand has an RFID that I can program. Right now, it's programmed to, if you scan it, to Rickroll you. And my right hand is totally a programmable NFC that I can use either in red teaming, if I so desire, to set up a long-range antenna, clone the door key to get in and, you know, see what else I can find. Or I can just clone my own work badge and never have to carry the darn thing ever again.
So does it do all ranges of RFID, or is it limited?
You've got to be limited to about a centimeter.
Yeah. As far as the actual range, are you talking about the antenna or the hand? Because the hand is like, you know, to scan the hand, you got to basically rub up against it.
Yeah.
If you're using a long-range antenna, talking about the card, 10 meters with the antenna that I've building.
10 meters?
10 meters.
Oh, yeah, but you can't plug it in.
But as far as my hand, no. Well, I don't have to plug it into me. I can just scan it using the antenna and then clone it using another device to program my hand.
Ah, nice.
Then I walk up and beep, I'm in. It's a process.
That's some next
level. It'd be like I'm sitting in my car and, you know, somebody's walking up to the door and beep, oh, I got him. All right, which one looks closest to me? Let me go ahead and do that. Take that card and program it in, and then I'm walking in.
Cue the very embarrassing elevator moments where you're waving your hand behind someone as you're trying to scan.
That would be fun if it could actually clone and replicate on itself. But, yeah, no, I need a big old box bigger than my laptop.
Oh, okay.
Almost as big as my ego. Otherwise, I'd be like, hey, is that where your wallet is? How are you, sir?
You won't believe it. You won't believe how many secretaries can carry an NFC reader in their back pocket.
What? Really?
I don't know. I'm just speculating that Cooper will find it.
Oh.
Yeah, no.
Like, oh, look at this one.
I wish to live to see the next day.
About that is now you can actually literally go up to, these are definitely not the droids you're looking for.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm actually working on a full thing, and I put in my paper to San Antonio B-Sides to try and be able to present
how easy it can be cracked. Right now you're gently caressing Sadek.
Yeah, so I'm trying to acceptance.
Paper.
I want acceptance.
I was concerned he was reenacting that scene from The Golden Child. I want the knife, and it was just, you know, some kind of inappropriate touching for fun's sake. You know, really.
Hey, it's only inappropriate if you complain.
Yeah. I didn't hear any complaints.
I think he liked it.
Statute of limitation on this podcast. So
it's about 5 minutes.
I think once we're done recording, it's over.
Look, this has been great going over the conferences and everything. So, and I one last tidbit. It's amazing how how we will let people inject us with RFID chips so long as they don't have .gov at the end of their or .mil at the end of their name.
Technology's not there yet for me to be able to be tracked.
Listen, federal government. If you really want that tracking stuff, don't worry. We'll do it to ourselves for ease of use. Just don't slap a .mil or .gov sticker on it. So let's go and close out. Let's close out on a couple of the attacks that we've seen, because we've seen two attacks with, I believe, logos. They have logos. They have websites. So that's the Drown attack and Cash Bleed. And this is insane the way these things have been branded. I don't even know if you can go into the technical details of the attack because they have branding.
And isn't that also like a whole other podcast in its own for each of them?
Oh, yeah. Well, to be specific, the Drown attack is based, as I understand it, is you have two different servers, one implementing SSL v2 and then one having full-blown TLS. And as long as they're reusing keys, you can then decipher one from the other. So that's a little bit more complicated. I think you've got to find two servers or two programs. So like you have to find... I think the implementation I saw was there was email and something else running on a server, like email and web running on a server. One was running SSL v2, and then the other one was running TLS, and they were able to recover
the key using SSL v2, and then that key also worked for the TLS side of things. So, but cache bleed is a little bit more sciencey, I want to say, because it has to do with specific implementations of crypto on Intel processors. Mm-hmm. So, and at this point, it's Haswell and below. And I got to tell you that I have a post on my dev laptop. I have a post Haswell, post Sandy Bridge architecture. So, this problem has been fixed in later issues of the Intel processor. AMD, I have no idea about the implementation.
I was going to say, so this is not an ad like by AMD at this point?
I don't know. As far as I've seen it, nobody's really tested out the AMD. But for some of these side channel attacks, there's a little bit more. There's considerably more equipment involved. Mm-hmm. So you might not. Maybe they don't have the same side channel attack for the AMD processor that they have in the Intel processor. Because let's face it, one has about 80% of the market share.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's like malware. There's no malware on Mac. Why? Because people with Macs are broke because they spend all their money on a Mac. So, and there's no business. You
can't steal anything from them.
Exactly. You can't steal anything from a Starbucks coffee house.
Yeah, right. But that's
a little black hat to talk about.
Well, no, that's just
in general.
Max in general.
Right. But no. Yeah. So let's talk about Dren.
I see it as the cache bleed thing is more difficult to get a hold of because there's just newer systems out there. But the Dren attack, you find that system with running the couple services on it. One is SSL v2 enabled, and then recover the key using that weaker cipher. But that's the same thing with a lot of other items.
Right. You can force the lower one to be used, and then you use it to extract the private key.
Same concept in GSM rogue base stations. What do you do to intercept GSM traffic? You use an IMSI detach message. You force that phone to go to a GSM network because LTE, UMTS, they all have that mutual auth. So whereas GSM just has, if the tower says this phone is authorized on my network, the phone can talk on the network. But with LTE, UMTS, there's a mutual auth. Phone and tower say, I'm authorized to talk to you, you're authorized to talk to me, and then they go ahead. So basically it's the same concept. In Dren is you're just knocking it down to something you can exploit.
See, that's pretty sad because to this day, and it drives me absolutely nuts, there are certain security platforms that, have their nice web-based GUI and certificates, and my Firefox won't connect to it because it says, oh, wait a minute, this is a really weak-ass certificate. Right. And so I have to dumb it down.
Yeah, this has SHA-1. This implements SHA-1.
It's like, why?
But SHA-1, okay, so SHA-1 is a signing algorithm separate from the actual event itself, from the crypto itself. That's just a protection. What is SHA-1? It's a protection for the key itself. We're not even talking about the actual algorithm on the other end. SHA-1's that's just one piece.
SHA-1 is just the hashing algorithm to which things are summoned.
Right.
Engagement.
Right, because in other words, you can reverse that more easily than the SHA-2, whatever version of it there is.
You can collide it. I wouldn't say reverse it. You can't, that's the whole idea of a hash.
So it's
a one-way, non-reversible function. The fact that I can't derive what that data was the hash.
Unless you build a new Rosetta Stone based on enough persistent collisions that you can then collect enough
very
data.
Very true.
That's the argument at its head. Fine.
Right.
So, I agree with you. Yes. Collision is not completely, it doesn't mean, oh, it's broken, never touch it again.
Yeah, a collision is, so finding unhashed data, we'll call it unhashed data. So finding what the plain text was in a hash or what the data was in a hash is more like you found its location. Okay. It's more like you found its location, you buried some treasure and you found its location. Or you just happened to.
So did you see, okay, so that's true, but did you see the other Ars article that talked about how iOS keys could get stolen this week? It came out and it was discussing ways that basically it could exploit a vulnerability in Elliptic Curve crypto to actually extract the private key, or so they say. But they only made it work on certain systems, and of course they announced after they patched, which is a good thing.
Okay, so this is... So once again, this is just another... This is another advent of having those close... Like the guy walking around the subway, you saw the picture, he had a POS system on him, mm-hmm. and he was just basically scanning stuff for under 20 bucks, or that was the theory.
That's the theory.
That's the theory. Mm-hmm. And he was just bumping it up against pockets. This one is okay. It looks like it's exploiting the same type of thing where it has to be a transmission. RSA Labs did this a while back, something like this, with deriving the RSA or AES keys by pointing a high gain antenna right at the processor. And because the processor was improperly shielded, it was able to recover that after so many cryptographic operations.
So that goes back to the idea that, so it's not proven. The whole point is that it's theoretically an issue if you capture that emanation. And that was the big deal here, is that it's you're reversing the key based on emanations, and the sky isn't falling.
And
I just want to point out that the sky is not falling.
You have to be close. And the other thing is, I'm not one of those guys. I like chip and pin.
Yeah.
I like contact. Yeah. I don't want the world to run on wireless. I think it's... Your key should be something I have to open up.
Sure.
Right? But I have to physically open
pin,
up.
They talked about it besides Austin, you know, a couple of years ago after the Target incident, that the credit card companies wanted to move to that because it then shifts the liability from them back to the user, because then they can just claim that, oh, you gave them your pin. But if it's a four-digit PIN, they even popped it on Twitter last night that there's 20 variations of the four digits that you can knock out, like 80% of all PINs.
Yeah, so
it's unbelievably weak.
19XX is how much percentage of it? Because it's birthdays. Right?
Yeah, it's like, come on, if you're going to rely on chip and PIN, at least make it a more complex password.
For my PINs, you're going to have to do a little bit of research on more research on me.
Sure.
To find it.
Well, you're not a part of the 80% then.
Yeah. So, which is good.
Never.
So in other words, there's your top secret.
No one dig that deep about you, though.
Yeah. You're gonna have to start digging out old photos, family reunion things, and hope that you see some inkling as to what my pins may be.
It's only four digits. Come on.
It is only four digits.
That's why I don't use anything that uses four digits. Everything I have is between 6 and 16.
You know, actually, here we go. Here's the challenge. If anybody's listening to the podcast, if you can guess I'll give you 50 bucks if you can guess my PIN number.
Ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here first. If you want Vesh's $50 through exclusive Bitcoin currency convert... No.
Now, get straight. This is cash money, baby. Cash money.
That usually involves a face-to-face handoff, then.
And
we already have one guest from the crowd. That's cool.
It's good, but we actually have a studio audience, which I think is phenomenal.
It's like the price is right up in here.
I know, really. It's a little bit disturbing.
But if you use 1, 2, 3, 4, I'm going to slap you.
Wait, my luggage. No, anyway. Okay, so...
Spaceballs.
Was there any... Yeah, of course. Always.
Of course. So for other topics, we can go into gaming and everything. But I think we filled
it up.
We just talked about a game. You're going to guess my PIN. I'm going to give you 50 mm-hmm. bucks. And I've offered money... I put money on the table before. One was to guess if any of the CCDC crowd mm-hmm. could guess Script Junkie's C2 methodology.
Oh,
I'd give them
no,
50 bucks.
No way.
It's still left unclaimed.
So as far as official handoff, should we have the cutoff at San Antonio, Texas B-Sides, and then your fire marshal talk, whatever, lunch talk? Can be, if anybody guesses it right, you hand over the 50 bucks.
I'll hand over the 50 bucks in front of everybody.
Maybe a big sloppy wet
kiss,
too.
San Antonio B-Sides. That'll be your incentive. San Antonio B-Sides, I will hand over the dough if you can guess my PIN card.
21st of May, folks, this is your opportunity to come and get your 50 bucks directly from Vesh himself if you show up and can guess his PIN.
Get your money.
All right. I would assume only one guess per person.
Yes, only one guest per person.
Because after a certain, if you let more than a person have more than one guest, you're going to wind up actually being
buy a ticket to
one guest per person. One guest per person, and if you're using several different emails, and I still know it's you, or I find out it's you, you don't get the money. You get one shot.
Otherwise, we're technically locking out the card anyway.
That definitely sounds like a reason to write a bash script.
So that's it. Yeah, well,
print out all numbers from one to what if I have a 6-digit PIN?
Right. What if it is?
So actually, I'm not going to tell you. Guess you can guess.
But you said it was four already.
No. Well, The conversation was four.
Let's do if you can guess my I do have up to an 8-digit PIN. I do have an up to an 8-digit PIN. And I will give you an additional $50 per additional two numbers that you can find.
8-digit PIN on what device? Your phone?
No, my phone is a passphrase.
It's on a sock drawer. It's an 8-digit PIN.
You know what? Let's just do four. $50 if you can guess my phone.
Four-digit ATM PIN.
That's good.
But you cannot broadcast the number. You have to tell me personally. It has to be a private email.
So we're staying white hat on this one.
Yeah.
Responsible.
Because I'm not going to be handing over $50 and watching 8 different Chinese people.
This isn't the LP.
That's saying that Chinese people actually listen to the podcast.
You should see my blog hits. I have heavy readership. in Russia and China.
I was going to say, are you big in Pakistan?
That's the VPS talking. That's all that is.
Yeah. So many VPSs are hosted out of China.
So gaming. Aside from this particular game we described,
I think we're gonna close out here now.
And tune in next time when we actually have a little bit more of an idea of what we're doing.